buzzer has sounded. We are headed to overtime with William Pattison on Fox Sports Knoxville. This is Fan Run Radio.
Ah, here we go. Hour number two on a Thursday, live from the White Claw Hard Seltzer Studios. It's overtime with William Pattison and Jace Brown joining you. After a victory Thursday, the Tennessee Volunteers are your 2024 regular season SEC champions. Feels pretty good to say that again.
Yeah.
I tweeted it out last night. You know, I've been in college for 3 years, and I've had the opportunity to experience a regular season championship, a tournament championship. There's just one more thing I'm waiting for.
The big one.
The big one.
The big one.
Let's hope we can get it. All right, great conversation in the first hour about the Vols basketball and baseball teams. As always, our best bets as well. But let's dive into the NFL now, where I'm calling this the purge Bills year. You know, they got so many purge movies these days.
They
got
to have like eight now.
And none of them are very good either. But the Bills seemed to have a full-on garage sale yesterday. And by the day's end, the Bills netted $25.1 million in cap space. The cuts included starters safety Jordan Poyer, cornerback Tre'Davious White, and Mitch Morse, who's a center, plus backups and Nyheim Hines and Deontay Hardy were all released. The 2024 cap savings is $23.2 million, with $10.2 million more coming in when White's release is official in June. Made a couple of changes as well. Von Miller, who was on the books for a lot of money, who turns 35 this month and eventually hopes to be an NFL GM, as he said, selflessly agreed to lower his $17.1 million base pay to $8.5 million, which incentivizes his ability to play above $20 million. The team also converted Rasul Douglas' contract, saving $11 million. Were these the right moves for the Bills?
You know, coming into this, it felt kind of like the ESPN layoffs. I mean, you take these big-name guys like Poyer and White and Morris, and you're like, man, what did these guys do to get dumped? And then you look at it, and like money-wise, you're like, well, it's not the worst thing that I've seen happen. But overall, I'm not sure how I feel still for the Bills. It's probably the right decision at the moment, just because don't want to get penalized for all the shenanigans that you've got to go through with salary cap, stuff like that. I think if you can avoid that at all costs, I think that's probably going to put your organization on the up and up, and you're not falling behind anybody at that point. It just feels wrong because those guys have been there for so long. These guys are veterans, and you've seen the heights that they can take you. Guys like that can take you, and you know it feels like it's a reset for a young core, a cheaper core at that. So long term, I don't think it's the best. It might be a better deal right now, but if you're sort of in a win now kind of deal, which with Sean McDermott, it kind of feels like it's going to have to be soon for him. I don't think this is the correct move. I think you could have been like Von Miller. You could try and negotiate, see what you can do, switch up how much you want to give out, and maybe be able to push for another Super Bowl here. But you know, you give up the like big talent base that you have on that defensive side of the ball, especially, and I think it's really going to shoot them in the foot. With that, you know, let me see who else they dropped down as well. You said Deontay Harry. That's not a huge one for me. Nyheim Hines. Maybe you could make an argument for that one being a little bit more of a question, just because. You know, James Cook can only do so much for you before he gets tired out as well. So taking some depth out of that already pretty shallow running back room is not what you really want. With Jordan Poyer and Tre'Davious White, you've already hit on it. Just how good that defense has been for so long in the secondary specifically, that's a huge hit. Those guys are a little bit older for cornerbacks, especially in the league right now. But the wealth that they gave you back there in terms of talent and production, I don't think you can really replace that in the next couple years.
No, and this marks an end of an era.
Yes.
You know, for the past 7 years, Poyer, White, and fellow free agent Micah Hyde who are all yeah. all former All-Pro players, have backstopped one of the NFL's best secondaries. Meanwhile, you know, I think this is a little bit of a surprise to many that they've been cut. But I think it's showing that the Bills are trying to move in a different direction. They understand that Josh Allen is their guy. Their championship window has consistently been closing over the last couple of years with Josh Allen now on a big contract. You give Von Miller a lot of money as well. I think that they're realizing that they have to make some changes. These guys have all been injured. Their performances have varied as well, and their yeah. salary cap as well. You know, these are expensive guys. So I think they're kind of trying to get a little bit younger, a little bit more expensive, and they've got to figure out a way to make this team roll with Josh Allen, because that window doesn't last forever.
Yeah.
And we'll head to the phones here in a minute. 865-546-8200, your number if you want to hop in and join. When I talk about that championship window, are the Bills still in it?
You know, it doesn't really feel like it. I mean, it feels like they've been sort of in that in and out stage for the better part of about 5 years now under the helm of Josh Allen and Sean McDermott. I think with those two, with the talent that you've had around him, especially on that offensive line that's been pretty stellar, you get him Stephon Diggs, James Cook has a breakout year this year. And despite that slow start this year, I think you had a really high shot to go all the way this year, especially whenever you look at who else was at the top of the AFC. I mean, you're looking at Baltimore, who's sort of had an off-kilter, really good year this year, looks dominant, and then came up short to a Kansas City team that towards the end of the year, around Christmas time, were still kind of questionable if they were even going to make the playoffs. At that point, freaking Denver was still in the running for the AFC West, I guess, title, you would call that. So I think the window is slimly open at this point. I don't think you would call it open. I think you'd call it cracked. And, you know, especially after the bad start this year once again, then Ken Dorsey just falls off the face of the earth, and now you're going back to who was the interim offensive coordinator. I think it's really, really short leash here, especially since McDermott's been going at this for quite some time and has still yet to get over the hump in the big ones.
Yeah, I agree. I think the root problem here is Sean McDermott. I don't think he's the guy for this group. He's a defensive-minded guy. You've got a guy in Josh Allen that you know can make plays that no one else can. I think you've got to get an offensive mind in there, and the Bills have not been the same team since Brian Daboll left. I think you continue to miss your window, and I think that's their biggest problem is McDermott. Yep. You've got to get a guy that can get in there and make this team work and know how to use Josh Allen. We know how talented he is.
Yeah.
You've got to get a coach that can go in there and use that talent correctly, because what they had this season was not working. Basically, was a game manager in that Chiefs game, was asked to do just a couple of simple things, and then at the very end of the game was hit the panic button. Oh, no, Josh Allen, save us.
Yeah.
That's not how it works, and that's not efficient football. Mm-hmm. I think you've got to get a better head coach in there, and I think that's their biggest problem.
Yeah.
All right, let's head to the phones, 865-546-8200. Your number if you want to hop in and join. We've got Dawson on the line. What's up, Dawson?
Well, hey, guys. Hope the show's going well. Sorry the noise might be a little bit of a problem trying to walk back, but coming to you guys from lovely Greenville, South Carolina, after – I hate to interrupt the NFL conversation, but
no, you're good.
A good win for the Lady Vols today. One that they pulled away in the second half after a bit of a slow start, but man, a really good defensive effort, I thought. Double double for Tess Darby, double figures for Jules Spear. The Sarah Puckett game, 22 points for her today. She looks good. With Rakia Jackson in foul trouble, it kind of puts this team in a box where you have to have those other players step up. And I'll tell you what, they did so today. It's a feisty Kentucky team. Mm-hmm. They did really well, I thought, especially on the defensive end. And they earned themselves a spot against Alabama tomorrow in the quarterfinals. So we're going to hang around for another day down here. But I hope you guys are doing well as well.
Yeah, we're doing well, man. I opened the second hour with giving you some props here. Working behind the board is like working a three-ring circus.
You should see him. He's like a madman over here. He's like go-go gadget over there, long arm and everything.
It's all muscle memory, I'll tell you. Once you get it down, it's not really that hard. It just kind of becomes second nature.
Yeah, well, I'm sitting here. I've got multiple callers on the line. I was freaking out. I put one guy on hold. Didn't mean to do that. Look, it was. We're learning as we go. But yeah, big win for the Lady Vols today. Continuing to build that resume. You know, have the opportunity to move up to a higher seed if they continue winning. Would love to win the tournament. That'd be awesome. Yeah. But, you know, you could possibly get another rematch here with South Carolina or LSU. And I think Tennessee, if they're able to play four quarters and play all the way and shoot a little bit better too, I think they could upset an LSU or South Carolina. I think you've seen this team play up to those standards. Now just have to have the opportunity and take advantage of it. Dawson, let's talk about the game last night. I know you want to give your opinion on it. You know, we opened the show. We had Jordan Moore on here. We broke it down. But what were your takeaways from the win last night?
Oh, man. I mean, gritty, right? I mean, you want to see this team go on the road and perform. They were asked to do a lot going from Tuscaloosa right to Columbia to have to play back-to-back really big stakes games. We talked about the stakes, you know, yesterday before the game. We were breaking it down, just how much they were playing for. And to me, it never really looked like they panicked. I think they kind of followed what we said of just, you know what you're playing for, but, you know, manage that and still play your game. And, man, they did that. Big moments all over, really. I mean, he had, you know, Adu had some big moments. Ziegler had some big moments. You know, obviously, you got to talk about Dalton Connect. I mean, yeah. Performance by him. I think there's a lasting image that comes from last night's game in terms of how it went. It's that picture of Connect with about 10 seconds left doing the ring celebration where he's pointing at his finger. I think that was probably a lasting image.
Yeah, a fun one.
Everybody showed up. I mean, did exactly what we wanted them to do. I mean, locked down defensively for the most part, I thought. Played pretty well. Managed the runs really well. You notice South Carolina went on a couple runs, especially late in the game, where I thought kind of the rails were going to fall off and we were going to start to, you know, give up a little bit of a late comeback, but they never did. They settled back in, and that's a really great win for this team. It puts them in a really great spot. A one seed now. Officially, Lenardi put it out earlier today. So, as of right now, trending towards that one seed. Really, really great win for the Vols.
And they deserve to be a one seed. You know, we had Jordan on here, and we were breaking it down, talking about the differential in strength of record, strength of schedule, and also what Tennessee has done as of late, continuing to rack up quad one wins and impressive wins, whether it be on the road or at home. You're trailing against Auburn at home. You find a way to win that game. You're trailing on the road against Alabama, the number one offense in the country. You find a way to win that game, and you go on the road once again to another top 25 team in South Carolina and find a way to win. I think this is a very impressive group, and I think they've continued to get better throughout the season, as we've documented on here over the last three months or so. I think it is unfair, but I feel like it is the reality that if you lose on Saturday, you likely drop that number one seed. I think that is unfair, but I think that might be the situation here. Dawson, what do you think about that?
I mean, I'd have to agree. I hate that. I'm with you. I think that's unfair, personally, based on what this team has done. Now, granted, in a three-game stretch, yeah, I mean, we talked about this four-game stretch, but, I mean, just to see what they've done in this three games, I don't think many of us expected them to go on the road to Tuscaloosa and win in the fashion that they did, locking down defensively late in that game. I didn't know how last night's game was going to go, you know, going to Columbia. So it's unfair. I think this team has earned it at this point. I mean, their resume, we've talked about it how many times now, you know, speaks for itself. So I hate it. I hate that that's how it works. But I also have, you know, a lot of confidence that this team is not going to have to worry about that, right? And they're not going to go into a home game like this with these stakes, with these eyeballs, and losing a moment like this. So, I mean, with that, I don't even know if I want to think about losing the one seed, because I don't know if this team's going to do it.
Yeah. And Jace, what do you think?
About what? What just?
Well, we'll just stop. I mean, if it's unfair or not, that if Tennessee loses on Saturday, that likely wipes away a number one seed.
I think, like we hit on a lot earlier, just the resumes that you can line up for both of these teams, it's pretty night and day. I mean, we hit on it earlier this week where all six of Tennessee's losses, KenPom rankings, add up to the one in Oregon State for Arizona. Plus, they have the additional five that they got there. I guess, like we said, we don't like using the word good losses, but Tennessee has just that. Everyone on their resume has been a decent loss to a decent team, besides maybe a fallout against A&M where they have a one-off night where everybody shoots lights out. Wade Taylor and Tyrese Radford go bananas for like a combined 52. Those don't happen every night, and when those do happen, you usually are going to lose those games whenever teams finally hit their stride. But beyond that, Tennessee has been the more complete team. I think this last two-week stretch of wins has been humongous for the seedings that we're going to see, including a really big one against A&M, winning at home against a really good Auburn team, going to Alabama and shutting down their the number one offense in the country from three-point land for like the last like 25 minutes of that one. I think that's probably the most impressive, maybe the most impressive win of anybody in the country this year, in my opinion. I think if you can go into a house like that and shut down the number one offense, I think there's no reason you can't be a number one seed with the rest of what else is on your plate already.
Yeah, I agree. Dawson, moving back to the Lady Vols, big day for Sarah Puckett. Do you think she can continue that tomorrow against the four-seeded Alabama Crimson Tide?
Well, I hope she doesn't need to. I think today was more of a kind of a need-to kind of thing because Rekia Jackson, you know, sat most of the first half. She actually only played 7 of the first 20 minutes of the game. She had 2 fouls in the first, I think, 6 minutes today, which meant, you know, we're kind of limited. You kind of had to go with some lineups that focused on Puckett. So, on one hand, I hope they don't have to have that happen. You obviously, you know what you get in Rekia Jackson, and she had good moments today when she was on the floor. But Puckett is the kind of player in this scenario. I don't know what it is about the SEC tournament, the NCAA tournament, but, I mean, she's had 3 years here in Knoxville now, and all 3 of those years, when you get to the postseason, it's like she hits another gear. We've seen so many of those players over the years in men's and women's basketball that they get to March, and they're a different player. And Sarah Puckett's that kind of player, and she showed it today. I mean, she brought it when she was the main focus of the offense on the floor. She ran it really well. She's been doing that for a long time. So if you need her to, absolutely, I think she could replicate that. But, you know, you obviously hope you don't have to have that. You hope you can have Rekia Jackson play some meaningful minutes tomorrow. They just Kentucky really attacked Rekia Jackson, got her in foul trouble. It was a great strategy, held them in the game for a while today. So you hope you don't have to have it happen. If it comes down to it again, though, the player that Sarah Puckett can be in March, I absolutely think she could replicate that if we need her to.
Yeah, and I think you have. I think if she's willing to put another performance like that up, I think you'll take it.
Yeah.
22 points for Puckett today, and you needed it. And a big second half for the Lady Vols too. We've talked about this team a couple of times and where they kind of lack that last little edge come the fourth quarter. You saw 25 points in the third quarter, 23 in the fourth. Way to finish it out as you get a double-digit win in the first round of the SEC tournament.
Yeah.
Do you expect to win tomorrow, Dawson?
You hope so. This is a team that beat the Lady Vols a few weeks back, kind of recent, actually. I think was the game that kind of sparked this little wake-up call that this team got going into Arkansas and the stretch from Arkansas until now. There was the game on that weekend before Arkansas came to Knoxville that Alabama beat you by double digits. That was a road game for the Lady Vols. See, tomorrow not going to be a true road game. Actually, a very large contingent of orange and Summit blue here in Greenville tonight. It was a really, really nice showing for the Lady Vol faithful. So, you know, hopefully you can get a better crowd in. You're not on the road, and you can do a little bit better. You're obviously playing a lot better basketball than you were at that point. So,
sure.
You hope to get one. You know, the tournament is weird. It's March. Things happen. But this team is playing a level, especially, you know, when you can go out and play in the third quarter like they did, again, with Rekia Jackson, for the most part, on the bench. She didn't play much into the third quarter either before she was sat down with a third foul. So, you lost her again in the third, and an entire double-digit run, I think it was a 10 or 12-0 run in the third quarter, was without Jackson on the floor. So if you can play like that and everybody's, you know, hitting on all cylinders like they were today, especially in that second half, absolutely. I expect them to come and battle tomorrow. Bama will be a tough team, but I expect them to at least compete and hope they can get the job done, get to Saturday.
Well, good deal. Enjoy your time in Greenville. I'm glad you got there safe and enjoy the win today. Great seats, by the way. That's a good view to watch a game.
Second row ain't too bad.
they give us the good seats to be right down close to it. So
well, there you go. Well, Dawson,
it was a good time.
Well, Dawson, we appreciate you calling in. We will not see you next week, as we will not be here next week because of spring break. Overtime, we're a little young here. We get vacation days, even though we're 21-year-olds.
Before our youth gets snatched.
Before our youth gets snatched, we go on vacation. But Dawson, we appreciate you calling in.
Absolutely. Thanks, guys.
All right. And now let's also bring in Joshy Boy. We got Joshy Boy on the line too. Let me maneuver this.
Go for it.
And we got Joshy on the line now. Joshy, what's up?
How are you guys doing?
Awesome. I'm doing well, man.
Good. You guys got any big plans for spring break next week?
Yeah, I'm headed to Destin, Florida on Saturday.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, so we're going down a group of about 12 guys in a house. We all got a place. Right next to the beach, and we'll be looking forward to that.
Yeah, I'm going down to Panama City, Old Faithful, leaving tomorrow for that one, and got a little bit better ratio than what Williams got over there with the demographic, I guess you'd say.
There are other people going too.
Okay,
I'm just talking about in the people in my house.
Of your house, I got you. But we're heading down tomorrow after everybody else gets out of class. So should be a fun week off. Get a little breathing room before you round it out, at least school wise for me.
You guys gonna watch a lot of conference tournament action next week?
Yeah, you know, I've been watching it already this week. A couple of intriguing matchups in the A-Sun. Mm-hmm. And I mean, one of
some upsets.
Yeah,
too.
Well, you had the other night. What was it? Lipscomb and who was
Austin Peay, wasn't it?
Well, Austin Peay was one too, but Lipscomb played. I can't remember who they played, but Lipscomb hit a shot to tie it with like 2 seconds left, and the other team came down and hit a buzzer beater. You know it's March when you're seeing those. Yeah. But I think the conference championship week is almost as fun as the tournament, because these are teams that are fighting for their life to get into the tournament. Yeah. Some of them are. You get to see kind of the last glimpse of your Power 5 schools, in the Big Ten, a couple of teams that really need these wins. And teams also trying to build the resume. So I think it's still a fun product.
So you think, William, if Tennessee wins Saturday against Kentucky, they're definitely getting that last one seed?
If they beat Kentucky, they are the number one seed, without a doubt, in my opinion. Yeah. I think last night is what did it. However, if you drop Kentucky, I do worry about the committee saying, you know, what have you done for me recently? And, you know, coming off a loss to Kentucky, I don't think that helps. Now, you'd have a chance to, win a couple of games in the SEC tournament. But I think really on Saturday, if you're able to win, that would give you 9 quad one wins on the season, which would be two more than what Arizona boasts. And I think that would give you another ranked win. That'd be 4 ranked wins in a row.
Yeah.
I think you have to put the number one team in Tennessee there. So I think you have to win Saturday. I think it's unfair that you have to, but I think if you want to keep that one seed, you got to win again.
So the line doesn't come out till tomorrow for the Tennessee-Kentucky game, but look ahead right now. What do you guys guess the line might be Saturday against Kentucky?
5.5 would be my guess right now.
Oh, yeah. You think it'll be that high?
You think it'd be lower?
I was thinking maybe 3.5 or 4.
Yeah.
I could see that with how Kentucky's been playing
recently. I could see it coming out at 4. I could see it kind of rising to 5.5 and kind of staying there.
Yeah.
Now, I don't think it gets any higher than 5.5 because I think that'd be a free wager on Kentucky.
It's up to 6 or 6.5. I wouldn't play it.
Yeah.
Well, that's also saying that, you know, Vegas models are saying that this could get, you know, be a dominant win for Tennessee again. Because even last night you saw it at 5.5, but you saw it kind of move up to 6 right at tip off.
Yeah.
I even saw 6.5 on a couple. So, I think 5.5 would be its max. I think it comes down around 4. We'll dive into the game tomorrow, Josh, you give the full breakdown, but I think you have to like Tennessee's chances again playing at home. They've been great. Senior night?
Senior night with guys like Vescovy and Josiah Jordan
and Connect.
All three of those guys going out with their last hurrah at TBA. I think there could be something brewing there.
And then it's also your opportunity to celebrate the SEC regular season championship too. I'm imagining they'll cut down the nets after the game in the event that they win. I guess they could still do it if they lose, but it's a little bit more of a kind of kick in the nuts to do it after you lose. But
straight up, since Barnes has been here, what's his record against Cal?
That's a good question. I don't know off the top of my head.
I know it's got to be a winning record.
You know, I can look that up real quick.
Yeah.
But I don't know it off the top of my head.
Yeah. So I think Russ was mentioning it on last night's postgame show on VR. If Barnes sticks around for two or three more years, he could possibly be the top 10 most winningest coach. Do you guys agree with that?
Yeah, I think, well, when I had dinner with my dad earlier tonight. He was asking about, what do you think about this team next year? And I was like, well, you lose Vescovi, you lose James, you lose Connect, but you keep a good body of this team. And that's Adu, and that's Awaka, and that's Ziegler. Jordan Ganey would most likely be a starter next year. I think the big thing is, are you able to hit on a portal guy like you did with Connect? And I think this team could be as successful. I mean, you keep your mainstays are still staying around. Now, Connect's a big one, and Vescovi's a big one. Josiah Jordan James is a big one. But you got to also think these guys that have been kind of waiting behind them are ready to step up too. So I think you could maybe not see as much success as you had this season, but I think you could mirror another 20-plus win year.
So if we do get that one last seed in the West region, they're definitely going to be playing in a Charlotte in the first round, correct?
I think they'll be playing in Charlotte regardless. Well, I think it's just with, like, the highest seed and closest spot to them, I think.
Yeah, it depends because I know
– and that's the Thursday game.
Yeah, you'd be Thursday, Saturday. We wouldn't be able to go for Thursday, but I'd travel for Saturday if they're able to win the 16 or 15 game because, I think it's too good of an opportunity not to go see this team play. But yeah, so I think Charlotte is the most likely destination. I know Memphis is hosting as well. But I think Memphis would be one of the other teams. I think was in terms of what I've seen from the Lenardi projections. I have not seen Tennessee playing in Memphis. But Charlotte, I think, is a likely destination and a good spot too. Plenty of Tennessee fans can travel to that one, and especially because they do it in groups, so when you get a ticket, you get two games. I think Tennessee would take up most of the stadium or most of the arena with Orange.
Yeah. Well, I'll be a couple of hours away from Charlotte that day because I'm going to Cherokee for the first day of the NCAA tournament.
There you go. That'll be fun.
Yeah, going to do a little gambling trip.
There you go.
Don't go too wild in there.
Hey, we'll be able to come back, man, all in one piece. Yeah.
Guys, out the door, I'm going to leave you with this. On Selection Sunday, next Sunday, Greg Gumbel reveals the Tennessee Volunteers are the final one seed, and it's going to feel great because the Vols are going to beat Kentucky Saturday. See ya.
All right, Joshy boy, thank you so much for calling in. We appreciate it. I like that statement too. I want to hear Greg Gumbel, the human microphone, go ahead and say, "And Tennessee is number one seed."
For the first time ever too.
Yeah,
like breath of fresh air.
I know, and it's fun that we get to sit here and talk about it, but also as students, be able to kind of live this dream.
Yes,
you know that.
Yeah,
a lot of Tennessee fans have kind of waited for this moment, especially if you're one of those diehard basketball fans. Mm-hmm. You know, Rick Barnes, the culture he has set here, has set a standard of each year, Tennessee is going to be a contending basketball team, not only in the SEC, but the country. And when you go down the line of Tennessee's history in the 2010s, you know, this wasn't something that happened every year.
Yeah.
And you know, I know very, very early on with the Jarnell Stokes teams, you saw some success, but Rick Barnes gets here, sets a culture with Grant and Admiral. And actually, Grant Williams was talking about it last night on the postgame show on the radio. You know, he said that Barnes told these guys early on, we're setting a foundation with these teams. And I think you still see that foundation today with these new set of guys. And, you know, I think it speaks volumes to the greatness of Rick Barnes and how special we are to have him as a coach.
Yeah.
All right, when we come back, we'll talk about the Lakers and their letdown last night in L.A. We'll be right back here on Overtime.
Ever been the coach who realized the team's gear just wasn't up to par? Well, if I'm being honest, that was me. Just a downright irresponsible and plain bad coach. Then SM Athletics changed the game. I want you to picture this. I walk into their store, a coach with a vision. SM Athletics didn't just see a coach. They saw a team's potential. And they delivered custom uniforms so striking. Our team's spirit soared. From cutting-edge apparel to top-notch equipment, SM Athletics transformed our presence. No more unreliable online orders or envying the other team's style. SM Athletics stands for quality, design, and on-time delivery every time. Coaches, elevate your team with SM Athletics. Call 865-966-3434 or visit smathletics.com. Get the best for your team, delivered right and on time. So, elevate your team's game by contacting SM Athletics today.
When it's past high noon, it's time for a vodka soda made with a vodka you actually heard of. I'm talking White Claw vodka soda made with White Claw premium vodka. JB Smooth only drinks vodka soda made with the world's smoothest vodka.
And you can too. Pick you up a bottle of the Triple Wave filtered vodka that's been distilled 5 times. White Claw Premium Vodka comes in 4 flavors. Black cherry, mango, pineapple, and just vodka. You haven't had vodka like this. No one has. White Claw Premium Vodka. Please drink responsibly. Are you ready to play hard and work harder? Are you looking to take the next step in your career with a company who celebrates hard work and appreciates those who do it? Then it's time to join the movement at Axel Logistics. Axel is looking to expand their award-winning sales team with logistics consultants who are outgoing, ambitious, and thrive in a fast-paced environment. If that sounds like you, visit axellogistics.com to learn more. Make sure you tell them you heard about it on Fan Run Radio. Axel Logistics, now is your time.
The superbly versatile all-electric EQB from Mercedes-Benz, a compact SUV that's full of big surprises. An optional fold-out third row offers luxurious comfort for up to 7 occupants, and almost 24 cubic feet of cargo space means this compact SUV is big enough to handle anything you can throw at it or in it. You can set the tone any way you like with 64 color customizable ambient lighting throughout. And just like every other Mercedes-Benz EV, the EQB features the very latest generation MBUX voice activated tech. So whether you want to set a new destination, change the tunes, or tune up the heat, all you have to say is, "Hey, Mercedes, this vehicle's all electric. The feeling's all Mercedes." Test drive the EQB today at your local dealer or learn more at MBUSA.com/EQB. That's MBUSA.com/EQB.
Back here on Overtime. Well, God's playing in the background. Nothing wrong with that, right?
No, nothing wrong with that. It's God's plan.
You know, it's what's not been God's plan has been the Lakers winning games as a parade of boos rained down last night in Crypto.com Arena. In the third quarter, whether they were because of the Los Angeles Lakers' 21-point deficit to the Sacramento Kings, the Raise the Roof celebration by King star De'Aaron Fox after his breakaway reverse dunk, or just a mixture of the two, they serenaded the home team as it trudged to the bench for a timeout. The stakes of the game for the Lakers were clear. Entering Wednesday's matchup, the seventh-seeded Kings were only 1.5 games ahead of the Los Angeles Lakers in the crowded Western Conference standings. With 2 games against Sacramento over the next week, the Lakers had a rare opportunity to pass one of the teams ahead of them and improve their chances to avoid the play-in tournament. From that perspective, the Lakers failed miserably.
Yes.
Their eventual 130-120 loss to the Kings at the Crypt came after blowing a 19-point first-quarter lead in just over 8 minutes from the 152 mark of the first quarter to the 656 mark of the third. The Lakers were outscored 71-31. Right now, this is where I stand with the Lakers. I think the funniest thing about this team is, in years past, it's, you know, if only Bron and AD were healthy. You know, if they were healthy in the regular season, they'd be a lot more consistent. They've been healthy this year.
Yeah.
It's been the role guys that have been injured for them, and I think that's been one of their biggest hits because they did a really good job in the offseason of bringing in some really big pieces. And they might not be the biggest names, but I think they're very valuable. Teron Prince, Gabe Vincent. Gabe Vincent's barely played for this team.
Yeah, he's been hurt all year, like you said.
Yeah. And guys they traded for last year, like a Jared Vanderbilt, have missed a significant amount of time this season. So they're already missing a bunch of their key role players that make this team completely work. But they're also, you know, struggling to rely on a 38-year-old, 39-year-old LeBron James every night. This team is an older team with a star that is older. You're not going to get the same energy and production each night like you get from a Anthony Edwards with the Timberwolves or a Shai Gilgeous-Alexander with the Thunder. The young players go really, really hard during the regular season. Now, come playoff time, the veterans come out and know how to, you know, they've been preserving their energy. They know how to get the rookies on the wrong note. But with this Lakers team, you know, the regular season is supposed to be something they already trudged through.
Yeah.
And now with LeBron and AD having to consistently go, you question their ability to be fully healthy come playoff time. And you question their ability to move up in the standings because they're playing the long game here. And I think they're fine with being in the play-in game, even if it's just a 7 or 8, 9 seed. Where do the Lakers stand in your eyes right now?
The one word that came to mind whenever I was reading through this was confused. You know, like you said, the injuries have been battling this team all year. But even with those injuries, this team has still found a way to win some big games, including a big one on the road back at the start of February against the Celtics. I felt that was something, a really statement win for the Lakers going out to Boston and beating a big rival from the East Coast. I felt like that was a big one. But then you go out and do like you did last night where, like you said, you're up 19 in that first quarter. You're looking like you're just going to cruise through and keep boasting and improving that momentum rolling in towards the last quarter of this year, and it just falls apart right in front of you. It kind of feels like some of the UT basketball teams of the past where some nights you'll look absolutely unstoppable, winning games that you aren't supposed to and doing it by a pretty wide margin and looking like, you know, you're the best team in the country, and then some nights you'll go out there and you'll just shoot yourself in the foot and not be able to overcome the hump that you put yourself in. And, you know, last night kind of summed it up on both ends because you start off so hot. You put up so many points in that first quarter, and then that second quarter and third quarter just run right over you. And Sacramento, I think, at one point went on like a 30-9 run at some point to overtake the lead and keep the lead for the rest of the way. So I think confused is probably the word for me, only because, you know, with all the injuries, they've still been able to perform well. It's just been at such an inconsistent clip.
Yeah. The Lakers have often risen to the occasion in big moments this season.
Yes.
The confidence they vocalized just two days earlier from this Kings game, from winning the in-season tournament and holding an edge in the season series against four of the six current Western Conference playoff teams, there's still confidence in this team, and they've risen to the occasion against some of the bigger teams.
Yeah.
And you saw in the play-in tournament, they were able to win six games in a row.
Yeah.
And those were some good teams they played as well. You know, the Suns, the Pacers, and you know, the Pacers aren't in the Western Conference, but they were able to cruise through the pool play and the bracket play. Does the Lakers in-season tournament win hold any weight to what this team can be, I think, is the biggest question. And I agree that I think it does.
Yeah.
Because you've seen when this team locks in and understands the assignment, this is a dangerous team, and they were able to plow through everyone. I think it goes right back to the personnel you have on this roster, not a lot of young guys.
Yeah.
You've got veterans that know when to click the button of, okay, let's turn it on, and the other side where it's like, okay, it's March, you know.
Yeah.
I think that in-season tournament, as silly as it may seem, I think it carries a lot of weight about what this team can be and is. And come playoff time, if you're able to get a stretch very similar to what you got in the play-in game, or what you got in the in-season tournament, and you were missing guys in the in-season tournament too. Mm-hmm. You get those guys, they're healthy now, and come playoff time, I think it does carry weight. What about you?
Yeah, I absolutely agree that it does carry weight because, you know, going back to my point, this team didn't sleepwalk through the in-season tournament. They won games against good teams like the Suns, and like you said, ended up winning the championship over the Pacers. At that point, you know, it's just another thing, or at least people just call it another thing for LeBron to put on his Hall of Fame career. But overall, I mean, that team came and played in early season competitive basketball, which we usually aren't used to seeing. And then, of course, like you said, injuries keep adding up. But you set the ceiling really high with what you can do at that point in the season. And to see them go on these roller coasters of consistency where, oh, we'll go on like a 5-game tear, then we'll drop 3-4 in a row, only to keep doing that over and over again. It's really unpleasing to see, especially as a Lakers fan, when, you know, like you said, it's that early in the season, you set a standard and show what you can be, and you just don't live up to it. So I think it absolutely does weigh on what this team can be. But again, with the injuries and lack of consistency, it's really tough to see play out, especially from a perspective of seeing this organization strive last year, at least towards the playoffs. We're just not seeing it at this time of the year.
The Denver Nuggets are still the reigning NBA champions, and then the question is there a team out there in the Western Conference that is equipped enough to beat this team? And this summer, when the Lakers were able to make these acquisitions of adding a Gabe Vincent and Taron Prince, again, they're not flashy, but I think it did the job. I think this team is the most equipped in the Western Conference to knock off the Nuggets. Mm. I think the biggest problem is, and the reason why they've lost 8 straight to the Nuggets, is because late game, the Nuggets have that second wind, and it's the Jokic-Murray pick and roll that is almost unguardable. Mm. And when you draw so much attention on two players, then that's where you see guys like Michael Porter Jr. get a wide-open three and knock it, like he was able to do last week when they faced off. Late game execution seems to be the issue with the Lakers when they're facing this Nuggets team. But I think multiple times in that Western Conference series, the Lakers had opportunities to win those games.
They could have won every single game.
Exactly. Every game was a, you know, 2 or 3 possession game. The margin of error was very small. The Nuggets just were able to execute better than the Lakers were. And I think that's a big reason why they brought this team back, not only in the offseason, but also kept these pieces around at the trade deadline. D'Angelo Russell was a guy that was floated around that could be traded. They ended up keeping him. And he's been hot and cold. That is what he is.
Yeah.
I don't know if he's going to be hot enough come playoff time to be a consistent winner and a threat like he is right now.
Right.
But the way he was playing right before the trade deadline, I mean, you got to give it to him.
Yeah.
And they did. I think this roster is the best equipped. You've got a 10-man rotation. Every great NBA champion has had a 10-man rotation where they can go into their bench come playoff time. Maybe not 10. I'd say 8 or 9.
Yeah.
But last year, you know, you had your starters of guys, you know what Murray is, you know what Jokic is, but you had Michael Porter Jr. and Aaron Gordon and Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, guys that can play multiple positions, defend multiple positions, and shoot the three ball, not so much Aaron Gordon, but Porter Jr. and Kentavious Caldwell-Pope can shoot the three ball at a high rate.
Mm-hmm.
And you had coming off the bench, Jeff Green, Christian Brown, and Reggie Jackson. Those guys could come in as well and play valuable role minutes.
Yeah.
You've got that with the Lakers too. Guys that can come off the bench like a Rui Hachimura, like a Taron Prince or Dinwiddie, whoever it may be. You've got guys that can come off the bench and play an impact. I don't think there's another team in the Western Conference that boasts the same depth on the bench in terms of guys that can be interchangeable pieces.
I agree. Yeah.
I think the Lakers are the biggest threat to the Nuggets still, despite their current standing. What about you?
Yeah, the first thing that came to my mind was, like you said, it's just the personnel that they have, that they can go 8, 9, 10 deep on the bench and still get decent production from guys. I mean, the starters are still doing all right. Besides Taurean Prince, he's been doing all right, still averaging about 9. But, you know, enough to be able to win games and win games that you're supposed to. And, you know, last night was one that They should have won, but couldn't get over the hump. But whenever you compare it to the Nuggets, I think it matches up perfectly personnel-wise because you've got guys that can defend the players that are on there, like an Aaron Gordon. You've got guys like Jared Vanderbilt that can come in and guard him. As for guard play, though, it is a little iffy just because D'Lo, like you said, is hot and cold and his defense is pretty much paper thin, I guess would be an overstatement. But up and down that lineup, I mean, you've got AD on Jokic and you've got LeBron against whoever you want to put him up against. You should be in a position to win games against a team like that if you can stop their bread and butter in the pick and roll. But just comparing the two rosters, yes, the Lakers might have, the most depth in the league compared to the Nuggets, I think. Maybe you can throw a Boston one in there. But overall, the Lakers just missing that consistency to get over the hump. It's really tough to see because this team has so much potential. Like you said, we saw it earlier this year. Injuries haven't been really nice. But when it comes to it, if you can execute late game with these guys, it'd be a different story. We might be looking at a Lakers title last year.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. What do you make of the Clippers? Because to me, the Clippers, James Harden and Kawhi and Paul George wow a lot of people because of the names and Russell Westbrook coming off the bench.
Yeah.
And I think this team has exceeded my expectations in the regular season, but come playoff time, James Harden on your team scares me. And last year, you had two opportunities to take out the Celtics. Two win-or-go-home situations for the Celtics, and he put up some of his worst performances of the playoffs. And in a win-or-go-home game seven, I think 9 turnovers, 12 turnovers. Yeah. It was definitely up there and went like 4-15 from the field. Yeah. His playoff history screams to me that this thing could get ugly come playoff time because they've got a lot of money invested in this guy. They gave up a lot to get him. And Kawhi and Paul George are great, too. If they're healthy, I think this team can do well.
Yeah.
But I don't think this is a Western Conference Finals team. I still don't. Mm-hmm. What do you make of them?
I also feel that way. Like you said, you've got the big four names in there, even with Westbrook coming off the bench. But, three of those guys have yet to, reach the mountaintop that is an NBA title. We've seen Kawhi Leonard do it twice. He did it with the Spurs and the Raptors as the number one guy. He's still the number one guy here, but with the luggage of a guy like James Harden, it's going to be hard to get over. I saw a stat line at some point last week where he was 0 of 10 from the field with 4 points and like 12 assists.
Yeah.
Like, I get you're able to facilitate around around your bad shooting night, but you can't have bad shooting nights like that in the playoffs, especially with the guys around you that can also put up points. If you're lagging behind and dragging everybody down on empty possessions, it's really going to catch up to you really quick. I think his inconsistency, I think the lack of seeing playoff P come into play, we keep calling him that. I haven't seen that happen in a while.
Yeah.
And then Westbrook, of course, he'll have some nights here and there, but he's just not the guy that he used to be with such a laid-back role now coming off the bench. So I still think I agree with you. I don't think this is a Western Conference team. I think depth-wise, they're not really there either, especially if you compare it to the Lakers. You look up and down, the deepest that you really want to start looking is, like a Terrence Mann, and that's it. That's like your 7 guy. So beyond that, it's not a great look for the Clippers depth-wise, and I think that's something that's going to hold them back.
Yeah, I agree as well. All right, when we come back, we'll wrap up hour number two here on Overtime. Stay right here with us on Overtime.
Is the team's gear just wasn't up to par. Well, if I'm being honest, that was me. Just a downright irresponsible and plain bad coach. Then SM Athletics changed the game. I want you to picture this. I walk into their store, a coach with a vision. SM Athletics didn't just see a coach. They saw a team's potential. And they delivered custom uniforms so striking. Our team's spirit soared. From cutting-edge apparel to top-notch equipment, SM Athletics transformed our presence. No more unreliable online orders or envying the other team's style. SM Athletics stands for quality, design, and on-time delivery every time. Coaches, elevate your team with SM Athletics. Call 865-966-3434 or visit smathletics.com. Get the best for your team, delivered right and on time. So, elevate your team's game by contacting SM Athletics today.
Attention service members and veterans. Introducing the Griffin Law Firm, your trusted ally in military legal matters. Whether it's fighting for your rights, navigating complex regulations, or seeking justice, at Griffin Law, your mission is their mission. Here's VFL Marshall Griffin.
As a veteran and retired military attorney, I've successfully defended lifelong benefits and helped preserve professional futures. So I know that when you hire a military justice lawyer, you maximize your chance to get relief. With my unique experience, I can advocate for you because there's no military matter that's too big or too small. Let us help you make these critical decisions that could affect the rest of your life. Remain silent, request counsel, call Griffin Law.
For a free consultation, call 888-707-4282. That's 888-707-4282. Or visit griffinlawdefense.com.
In a world filled with deadlines and screens, sometimes we forget the simple joys of life, days filled with special moments. At Inward Half, we understand the essence of these moments. Feel the difference between our breathable fabrics and flexible apparel as you disconnect from the hustle and bustle and reconnect with what truly matters. Inward Half, simple luxury for on and off the course.
Trips that you plan for the next whole week.
All right, back here on Overtime, wrapping up a Thursday edition. We appreciate you listening along with us. Great stuff today as we talked about the Vols securing the SEC regular season championship and also the baseball Vols. They've been continuing to be hot as well. Those are both in the first hour if you want to listen on the SoundCloud if you missed it in the first one. But right before we head out, let's talk about Fox Sports. Possibly will feature a Friday primetime college football game on its broadcast network each week beginning this season. The network is set to announce, a source with direct knowledge of the network's plans told The Athletic today. The gains will come from the Big Ten, Big 12, and Mountain West. The first matchup is still to be determined because of the television schedule. Coordinated with the other networks, does not take place until May, so we won't know who these games will be. But what do you make of this? Because you know we've seen the NFL start to put some games on Fridays and Saturdays and Mondays and special holidays. Do you think this is something that could work in college football?
I think it can. I mean, if you're going to be shooting for avoiding the Friday Night Lights phenomenon that's across America, I think it's not a bad idea. And it's an extra primetime slot. I think that's the main thing is you're probably going to be one of, if not the only game playing that night that's worth watching. So you get a chance to put some big name brands on there that can also draw some attention. So I'm not mad at it. It just feels a little anti-college football for me because just, especially here around SEC country, Saturdays are the biggest day of the week regardless. If you start throwing games between, like you said, if it's like a Big Ten game between like a let's say like a Michigan and a Wisconsin on a Wisconsin Goodyear, people aren't going to be too happy about that on a Friday night. So I think that's one thing that could ruin it. But overall, it's not the worst idea that anybody's had, but really not ideal.
Yeah, I think this is. I think it's fine. Just an opportunity. Yeah. Let's get some more football going, especially a good matchup. I think wouldn't hurt anyone either. So I don't have a problem with it. I think it's an opportunity for some of these schools, like a Mountain West team, to get a little bit more notability, and also you could get some big games out of the Big Ten and Big 12 if they decide to do it. So You know, I was never, you know, like Colorado played on Friday night a couple of times this past season. I wasn't necessarily tuned in for that. But let's say, you know, because the Pac-12 championship usually has been on a Friday night, I think, in the past. So, you know, if it's a big enough game, I think people will tune in. We'll just have to see. All right, that's going to wrap it up here on Overtime. We appreciate you listening along with us. That will be all for Jace for the week as he's heading off to Panama City Beach. Yep. Have fun. Stay safe. We'll see you in about a week, I guess. Yeah, about a week or so.
About a week. 10 days
and
so.
We'll be fresh off of Selection Sunday, so we'll have a lot to talk about.
Lots.
All right, man, have a good time. Enjoy your break, and we'll be back tomorrow. It'll be me here still, so no reason to fret. We'll get you ready for the Kentucky and Tennessee matchup tomorrow here on Overtime. Thank you so much for tuning in. I'm William Patterson signing out.